Hey, true crime besties. Welcome back to an all-new episode of Serialously. Hey everybody, welcome back to an all new episode of Serialously with me, Annie, here to talk all things going on in the true crime world. Now, if you are a new listener over here and you haven't checked out the podcast, or maybe you've only listened to an episode or two, let me break down what Thursday episodes are all about. So on Monday, we have our big single case deep dive episode where we, you know, are going into the trenches, we're digging out every single nook and cranny piece of information we can find, and we deliver that as a singular case. Then on Thursdays, I jump on the mic and I share anything going on this week in the true crime world, whether it's new cases that are breaking, maybe there's some updates in cases that are going on, and we just talk through all of that together. So just to keep you all kind of in the know of what's happening, because I know it's difficult to watch hours and hours of trial footage or keep tabs on everything that's going on or going viral at the moment. So that's what we're doing today. And we have got quite a bit to talk about. We are going to be talking about some updates in the Madeline Soto case. We obviously are going to be talking about P. Diddy a little bit. We're going to be talking about Jordan Turpin because there's some newness there. And we're going to just go through a lot of things and some new cases as well. Before I jump in, I do want to mention, you may have already seen this if you follow me over on YouTube, but I decided that things have been a little less than stellar lately in terms of like things in the news. People are getting ready for spring, but I know there's a lot of hardships out there. And so from, you know, time to time, I like to jump on and do a giveaway of sorts, just as a way to like pay it forward, whether it's a gift basket, money, tickets to something, whatever it may be. So right now we are doing a giveaway. I'm going to be giving away a little over $1,200, $1,250 to be exact, and I'm going to do it to five different people, so it'll be $250 each. And all you have to do to enter is put your email address and your name in, and that's really it. So I'll put the link to the giveaway form in the show notes below, and I'll remind you again at the end of this episode, so don't worry, you don't need to like close out and do it now so that you don't forget. But it's a really awesome giveaway, and we're going to pick the winners this Friday. I'm going to announce them on the community page over on YouTube, and I'll contact you individually, of course, if you're a winner. But just want to give everybody a little bit of extra cash and happiness to brighten up your day, to go forward with spring break plans, maybe put towards a vacation or a beach day, whatever you want, whatever you want. So anyways, I'll put all of that in the show notes, but let's get into all things true crime. I want to start with a little bit of a mini update of sorts. So this is in regards to Chad Daybell's upcoming trial. If you don't know Chad Daybell and Lori Vallow, I mean, I'm sure you do by now. If you don't, let me know, but I have a super deep dive talking you through all of the things cult related to them. Actually, maybe I'll put a link to that episode just in case, even if you are familiar, that way you can get fully caught up in everything. But anyways, Chad Daybell's trial starts this Monday, April 1st, and it's opening with jury selection. The trial is actually expected to last anywhere from 8 to 10 weeks, including a penalty phase if he is convicted. Now, personally for me, I've been talking about Chad Daybell, Dumbbell, Peter Griffith, all for weeks, for months, for years. I do not like this guy. I think he is scum. I think he is bottom of the barrel. So I personally cannot wait to see this loser, scrub, wimp be prosecuted. And I am just very much looking forward to it. Now, as I said, if you haven't heard of this case and you want to get caught up, and or you just feel like you want a refresher on the Lori Vallow, Chad Daybell saga, I'm going to link that in the show notes and you can fully catch up there. But anyways, that starts April 1st. So here we go. Now let's talk about Madeline Soto for a minute. If you aren't familiar with Madeline Soto, let me give you a very, very high level recap of this case. And once again, not to be a broken record, I will link the full episode in the show notes. But this is one of the more horrifying cases that we have talked about in a long time. In the end of February, Madeline was reported missing by her mom. She had been dropped off at school that morning by the mom's boyfriend, but then when the mom went to pick her up from school, she was nowhere to be found. Come to find out, 2 days later, the boyfriend is arrested for like all of this horrific sexual content that they discovered on his devices, and a lot of that content included Madeline before she was even 13 years old. I think it started when she was 11 years old, and just like some really graphic and horrible stuff, which I go in more detail again on that full episode. But then 2 days after that, that Friday of that week, her body was discovered and she had been murdered. So what's interesting though, is there still is not anybody who has been charged in Madeline Soto's murder, including Stefan Stearns, the mom's boyfriend, who was the last person to see Madeline, and that person who has been charged with 60 sex crimes. 6-0. All of those charges came from the video and the photo evidence that was found on his phone, which, by the way, I also will say this, he tried to wipe his entire phone clean the day that Madeline went missing, the day that she was reported as missing, I should say. He said, oh, I did like this accidental reset. I don't know what happened. Like, no, bro, nobody's believing you. But now we know that Madeline was actually never even missing at all, and police have surveillance video of Stefan throwing away her backpack and her school laptop in a dumpster early that morning. And the surveillance video also indicated, according to police, that they believe Madeline was inside his vehicle when he was caught on tape and that she was already deceased. It is truly sick. Now, the reason that murder charges have not been filed yet against Stefan at all at this point is most likely because he is already in custody for those 60 sexual abuse allegations, and the investigators are, of course, doing everything on their end to make sure that they have their case, like, as ironclad, as buttoned up as possible. But in a sick twist and turn of events, recently Court TV had a guest on who discovered that Stefan had actually been using the app Telegram the night before Madeline was killed. Now, Telegram is an encryption messaging app that offers users privacy and protects their data. However, like so many things today, criminals in particular find this app to be helpful because nothing on the app can be extracted, even if law enforcement does have a search warrant. So this makes it a breeding ground for all kinds of nefarious activity, which unfortunately includes child predators using the app to communicate, to send pictures back and forth with each other, things like that. Now, we don't know exactly what he did on the app that night, and maybe it was nothing. But we do know that based on the 60 charges, he frequently recorded a lot of things that he did to Madeline. Like, very graphic things, guys. So it has made people wonder, did something happen to her the night before, and that's the reason she was killed? Like, maybe something went too far. Maybe she threatened to tell on him. There are still so many unanswered questions in this case, but as always, as more updates in this case come out, I will definitely keep you guys updated. So now let's talk about this missing college student from Texas, because I have been getting lots of requests to cover this case. However, honestly, not too much is known. Caleb Harris is a 21-year-old student at Texas A&M Corpus Christi who disappeared after ordering Uber Eats. He was last seen at his off-campus student housing apartment complex, and this was around 3 a.m. on March 4th. Now, according to Caleb's parents, Caleb's roommate got a new dog, so Caleb and the roommate, they were playing with the dog that night. Then, they believe that Caleb was preparing for the next day and ordered his lunch through Uber Eats, which they say is very normal for him. He is like a creature of habit. Surveillance video and images with Caleb's parents have helped put together a little bit of a timeline leading up to Caleb's disappearance, and so far they know the following. At 1 a.m., Caleb is seen on a Ring doorbell camera with his roommate, his friend, and a puppy. At 2 a.m., the roommate goes to sleep. Caleb is preparing his fishing reels for the next day. And this is the last time that the roommate sees Caleb. Then, 44 minutes later, at 2:44 a.m., Caleb sends a Snapchat to his parents walking the new dog. At 2:58 a.m., Caleb's phone is then turned off or it dies, but it pings at his apartment complex. Then at 3:20 a.m., the Uber driver is seen on surveillance camera with Caleb's order. The Uber Eats delivery was marked as complete, but Caleb's Uber Eats order was still on his doorstep the next morning. His dad said, quote, "He kind of vanished. There's no evidence of wrongdoing, but there's no evidence at all." So it's kind of a matter of looking at every inch, everything we could possibly think of. It's a mystery. So literally, after that Snapchat that he sent walking the dog, there has been no sign of Caleb since. And now, here we are, and it's been more than 3 weeks since he disappeared. And not only that, but it's also been reported that Caleb didn't have his wallet or his shoes with him. So investigators have knocked on doors and they've interviewed people who live at his apartment complex and requested surveillance camera footage. They also have interviewed Caleb's roommates, friends, family, and acquaintances, and so far they don't believe any of them had something to do with his disappearance. Authorities are also being assisted by the FBI and United States Marshal Services, and the search has expanded to the San Antonio area and some other surrounding areas. However, authorities have not released any information on why those agencies are involved or why the searches have expanded that far. Because one of the cities that it has expanded to is about 2.5 hours away from Corpus Christi, and San Antonio is also about 2 hours away. So people in the area with any ring cameras or surveillance footage of any kind have been encouraged to contact the Corpus Christi Police Department. Caleb's dad, Randy Harris, has been searching every single day for Caleb and speaking to as much media as possible in hopes that they will find Caleb or that somebody will come forward. The Harris family posted a $25,000 reward last week for any information leading to the safe return of their son by March 31st, all in hopes of generating new leads. Now, what I do have to say, I'm sure that the FBI, the police, they've investigated every lead. But my mind, and all of the research we've done, it says that the friends, the roommates, the family, everybody's been interviewed. But has the Uber Eats driver been interviewed? Now, I'm not trying to go full conspiracy here, guys, but we have seen so many cases before involving Uber drivers, involving them picking somebody up, pretending they're the driver or whatnot. So is it possible that when he went to the door with the bag, he knocked, Caleb opened the door, or maybe Caleb was outside of the door already when he arrived and something happened? I don't know, possible, right? Again, I'm sure that they have investigated this fully, but I just don't know what else could have happened. How does a boy just vanish into thin air? So hopefully his family gets some answers very soon. Moving on to a new case where a firefighter has been charged with murder. A Washington State Fire Department chief, Kevin West, who called 911 in January saying that his wife, Marcy West, was having a seizure, is now facing murder charges in connection with her death. Just before 4:30 a.m. on January 8th, Kevin called 911 saying that his wife was having a seizure, that she had stopped breathing, and that he had now begun performing CPR on her. When medics arrived, they tried to resuscitate her, but they were unable to save her. After Marcy died, police spoke to several people who said that they had concerns about Kevin and Marcy's relationship, and they were worried that her death might not have been natural. When her autopsy came back, there were indications of trauma to her neck. And her cause of death was asphyxiation with blunt force trauma to the neck. The manner of death was ruled a homicide, not a seizure, like Kevin had said. The WPD asked Clark County Sheriff's Office to come in to take over the investigation so that they could avoid any conflict of interest, since Kevin has been part of the county's fire department for 22 years. Throughout their investigation, they uncovered that Kevin was cheating on Marcy and was planning to leave her on the day that she was killed. And then, get this. 2 weeks after Marcy's death, Kevin was having drinks with his girlfriend when police showed up to question him. Which, what a piece of shit. Police also found two letters that Kevin wrote to his girlfriend that were found in the garage. One of the letters said, 2024 will be our year. We will be together, celebrating every day with love and understanding of what it means for you and I to be together. Our story will ring in the new year loud for all to hear. That's a direct quote, guys. So Kevin was arrested on March 22nd, and he has now been charged with first-degree murder. He's being held on a $1.5 million bond. Now, while he hasn't been found guilty, I will say it is not looking good for Kev. Like I always say, don't murder people, just get a mother effing divorce. Like, why do we have to jump to murder all the time? It just blows my mind. So I'll keep you posted on what we find out about Kevin, about the affair that he was having, how long it was going on, and if he is truly responsible for his wife's murder.
All right, for all my podcast listeners out there who ever have a hard time sleeping, whether it's you have a tough time sleeping or if you have a tough time staying asleep, I know for me, anytime I wake up in the middle of the night, it's like I never can fall back asleep. I'm up for hours and it's just chaotic. I'm going to share with you my secret sauce. And it's not so secret because I have shared it before, but it's something I literally legit use every single night, and it is Beam Dream Sleep Tea. Now, let me tell you about this tea, guys, because it's only 15 calories, it has zero added sugar, and it tastes like hot chocolate, straight up.
They have so many amazing flavors, and while I used to be a sea salt caramel girl, I'm now obsessed with the peanut butter dream or the brownie batter dream. It is so, so good, so sweet, tastes just like dessert.
I drink it 30 minutes before I want to be asleep. It tastes like a nice little dessert. It's a perfect way to end my night, and then bam, I'm asleep within 30 minutes. I stay asleep. I don't wake up feeling groggy. I feel refreshed. I feel energized. I mean, I have tried Ambien, I've tried melatonin, I have tried valerian root, I've tried it all. Nothing ever worked for me, and I actually had some pretty gnarly side effects with all the other things. Beam is my go-to, and I'm so thankful my husband introduced me to them. And today, my listeners get a very special discount on Beam's Dream Powder, their science-backed healthy hot cocoa for sleep with no added sugar. Better sleep has never tasted better. The numbers also don't lie, guys, because in a clinical study, 93% of participants reported that Dream helped them get better sleep. For me, even my Aura ring has showed that my sleep scores went from the 60s to now the 90s. So if you want to try Beam's best-selling Dream Powder, get up to 40% off for a limited time when you go to shopbeam.com/AnnieElise and use code AnnieElise at checkout. That's shopbeam, BEAM.com/AnnieElise and use code AnnieElise for up to 40% off. Now I want to talk to you about Jordan Turpin. I am sure if you are a true crime fan, you know all about Jordan, her siblings, and the house of horrors that she truly came from. She is a hero. As a recap, her and her siblings were basically held captive by her parents for decades. Trapped in the home, they weren't eating well, they were shackled to their beds, and Jordan one night bravely escaped. She got a phone, she stole one of the cell phones in the house, and she called for help, and all of the siblings were rescued. She also has been very, very active on TikTok. She talks about her story time to time. For the most part, she's trying to just move forward with her life, but it's one of the most heartbreaking cases I've ever covered. I will link that in the show notes as well, but it also, I don't know if it hit extra hard because it was close to where I live. It happened over in Riverside County. I believe it's Riverside County, but it's out in the Inland Empire. And it was really just like one thing after another. And it was kind of like blow after blow with this family too, because even after the siblings were rescued, their new foster family was arrested for sexually abusing them and physically abusing them. So it's like they were rescued just to go to one more house where they were physically assaulted. It was horrible. And again, I'll link that in the show notes so you can get fully caught up. Or if you didn't even know that piece of it, if you're familiar with the original case, but you didn't know all of that stuff about the foster family, I'll link that too, because it is wild, guys, and truly, truly vile. So recently, Jordan posted on Instagram that she's coming out with a book. And I have to say, it's going to be a bestseller because this girl is the epitome of a hero, of bravery, of resilience, of all of the things. In her post, she wrote, "It's been a hard journey. I'm okay now, but I come off strong all the time, and I want people to know that they are not alone. That's why I made this video. I'm planning on writing a book of this journey. I'm so blessed I made it out. It's hard, but that's life. Everyone goes through life, and I hope I can help others with my story. The first part, I was in an abusing foster home, and I was bullied by the sisters and abused by the parents. Second part, I got stuck in a bad, toxic relationship. Only two of my sisters were there for me. I ended up in the hospital because my health was failing. I'm so thankful Janetta stood by me until she knew I was okay. I had to go to therapy to see why I kept going back to him, and I learned that it was a trauma bond. The third part, my family got really jealous. They took advantage of me, bullied me, made up lies, stole from me, and when they didn't need to because they had more than me. I was at my lowest point and they saw that but still didn't care. People get scared that they know the truth always comes out, so they hide and break the ones that might let the truth out. The fourth part, I learned you make your own family, and I'm so blessed to have someone to call mom and dad and siblings that stood by me. I'm very thankful I got away from all the toxic people in my life. It wasn't easy, but you only can protect yourself. Therapy helped a lot. I feel very blessed where I am today and ready to share my story to help others. I also appreciate my fans. I couldn't do it without y'all either. Y'all make me want to stay strong. This is a sneak peek of part two of my book." Of course, this post was flooded with comments of support, and Demi Lovato also commented and said, "You're so strong and such an inspiration. I'm so proud of you." Now, going back to the foster family, Marcelina Olguin, 64 years old, was arrested in January of 2021 and charged with multiple counts, including committing a lewd act on a child under 14 years old, committing a lewd act on a child 14 to 15 years old when the defendant is 10 or more years older than the victim, false imprisonment and inflicting injury on a child. And Rosa, his wife, and their daughter, Lenny, were also charged with willful child cruelty, false imprisonment, inflicting injury on a child, and dissuading a witness. In 2022, the siblings who lived with them filed joint complaints against Riverside County and the private foster care agency, ChildNet Youth and Family Services, claiming negligence and breach of mandatory duties. According to the civil complaints, Marcelina sexually abused multiple female siblings, quote, grabbing and fondling their butt, legs, and breasts, kissing them on their mouths, and making sexually suggestive comments. This suit also says that the three members of this foster family would subject some of the children to physical abuse that included hair pulling, hitting them with a belt, and striking their heads. The siblings also endured, quote, severe emotional abuse. The foster family made some of the children even sit in a circle and recount in details the horrors that they had experienced while they were living with their biological parents. They would also force the siblings to eat excessive amounts of food until they threw it up. Now, according to Jordan's attorney, Jordan says that the emotional abuse that they received at the foster home was worse than the abuse that they had endured for years under their parents. A preliminary hearing in the criminal case against the three members of the foster family is scheduled for this Friday, March 29th, and I hope they throw the book at them. I mean, to be a foster family where you take in people who have been tortured, sexually abused, physically abused, and then to inflict that on them again and get kicks out of it, watching it, and make them recount the former abuse, it is so sick and twisted, and it just really illustrates how, I don't want to say broken the system is, but like how many creeps are after this, not just adopting, fostering, doing all of that for a paycheck because they get paid from the state, but doing it for their own sick perversions, to prey on them, to exploit them. It's, and like to get kicks, sick kicks out of it. It is disgusting. And they are like not worse humans on this earth, in my opinion. Now let's talk about sick and twisted, guys. I'm going to just make a blanket statement before I get into this because you'll understand why. This is all alleged. This is all my opinion. Everything I say in this either has been sourced from other news reports or is opinion-based only. Please do your own research and form your own opinions. With that, let's talk about P. Diddy. There is a lot to talk about. So Sean Combs, also known as P. Diddy, Puff Daddy, Diddy, however you grew up knowing him, his $40 million home in LA and his mansion on Star Island in Miami were recently raided this week by Homeland Security, and the raid was in connection with a federal sex trafficking case.
Law enforcement sources are telling ABC News that right now authorities are carrying out searches at properties associated with P. Diddy. This is all part of a federal investigation into human trafficking. They also say that this investigation has been ongoing now for several months. They add, our sources, that an arrest does not appear to be imminent at this time, but this goes into multiple allegations against Sean Diddy Combs over the years. There's been several civil suits against him as well, including human trafficking, all of which he has denied as this has been ongoing. But again, clearly an escalation that we are seeing play out live right now in Los Angeles. I want to bring in our ABC News contributor and trial attorney, Brian Buckmeyer, who I know, Brian, you have been following this case for many months, and you bring it up to me all the time. And now I wouldn't call this the culmination. In fact, probably this is just the beginning, right? So what do you make of the fact that they've decided to carry out these two searches simultaneously and on other sides of the country here?
So, Kayla, you're right. I've been talking to those about this for too long. But what does it get you? What does a person need to have the ability to search a home? Probable cause. So what I'm doing is I'm looking backwards. How could a judge grant the ability to search these two homes, and why would you do it simultaneously? Probable cause being the belief, or at least having the quantity of information, that a crime either did happen, is happening or is going to happen. That's how law enforcement must have to prove to a judge or a court why they have the opportunity or the legal ability to search someone's home. Now, why would you do it in conjunction from one property and another at the same time? Law enforcement typically does this because they are worried that information or property or evidence may be hidden away or destroyed while you're searching one property. And so they're looking for something to corroborate the belief that they have that a crime did occur. And as you pointed out earlier, he's facing multiple allegations of sex trafficking. So perhaps that is the crime in which they're investigating. Perhaps that is what they're trying to seek more information from. But in order to search a home, you have to have probable cause. The only question is, probable cause of what?
Probable cause. And so, Brian, as you look at this and you watch this, and we'll shout if we see anything, any more movement on these screens. But it is important to note, right, that this is all being run out of the Southern District of New York here. So there is a tremendous amount of coordination happening within law enforcement at the highest levels.
Absolutely. And the reason why I believe it's being coordinated out of the SDNY or the Southern District of New York, which encompasses for the most part Manhattan, is a lot of the civil allegations stem from there, whether it be Cassie or the other four allegations or civil lawsuits that stemmed from it afterwards. And so what it appears to be, at least if you're thinking this is connected to the civil lawsuits, are that the SDNY is coordinating with the other agencies in Miami as well as Los Angeles to search the properties of Sean Combs to see if there's any evidence of that. Now, I can't think of anything off the top of my head what would be evidence of sex trafficking, predominantly something that might stick out as to something to corroborate what we've heard in these civil allegations. But if they find it, it could lead to further investigations. At this point, we're hearing that there's no potential arrest, but it doesn't mean there wouldn't be one in the future based on either more information collected or if they're finding whatever it is that they're hoping to find in these two locations.
Some of the lawsuits that were just mentioned include one from the singer Cassie, who dated Diddy between 2005 and 2018. I think they were even engaged at one point as well. And in that lawsuit, she detailed years of abuse. She claimed that she was beaten, she was raped, she was forced to have group sex with prostitutes, and that she had to carry weapons for him. P. Diddy settled this lawsuit with Cassie one day after she filed it. And I remember at the time when all of that happened, everybody was like, oh, of course it's hush money. He doesn't want all of this being exposed because if it goes forward, more victims will come forward, more lawsuits will happen. And that's pretty much exactly what has happened. Because a week later, two more women came forward and accused him of sexual abuse. They did this under the Adult Survivors Act before it expired, which was a New York law permitting victims of sexual abuse a one-year window to file civil action regardless of the statute of limitations. In the lawsuit, the women detailed multiple instances of sexual assault, beatings, and even forced drugging, allegedly committed in the early 1990s, all by P. Diddy, who at the time was just a talent director, a party promoter, and he was really on the rise in the hip-hop community. Now, one of the accusers said that she was a 19-year-old student at Syracuse University when she agreed to meet him at a restaurant in Harlem in 1991. After their date, she said he intentionally drugged her, then brought her home and raped her and videotaped it, all without her knowledge, and then later shared it with several other people. Like, if that's true, what a freaking creep. Now, another lawsuit comes from Lil Rod, L-I-L. His name is Rodney Jones Jr. Now, he claims that P. Diddy tried to groom him, groped him, and was also being sexually touched. It also says that he had to work in a bathroom while P. Diddy showered and walked around naked. Additionally, it says he was sexually harassed at multiple parties of P. Diddy's by Cuba Gooding Jr., and that he made a bunch of sexual advances that he told Cuba no to several times. That lawsuit even mentions Jennifer Lopez, J-Lo, saying that back in the 2000s, Jennifer brought a gun for P. Diddy to a club, and that gun was then used in a shooting at that club. Now, in a twist that I did not see coming, the lawsuit even dropped Prince Harry's name in it, not alleging any sexual abuse or anything like that, but more saying that these are the kinds of people that were at these parties that P. Diddy had around all the time. I mean, it is wild when you start really going down the rabbit hole of this, guys. Now, while the raids were happening, P. Diddy's private jet named Love Air was tracked online, and it was reported that the jet was in Antigua and in the Caribbean. Some reports have also said that P. Diddy was seen outside of Miami International Airport and was speaking with authorities there. At first, people were saying he hopped on the jet and fled to a country without extradition. That doesn't really seem to be what happened, especially if that sighting in Miami happened later. But I also saw a report today that
it wasn't him that was on the jet to go to this country of no extradition, but it was actually all of this evidence. That it was like hard drives, files, photos, videos, all of this stuff that he and his team apparently like loaded on the jet so that it could take off so that it wouldn't be found during the raid. Is that true? I don't know. I'm just reporting what's being said. But as you can imagine, there is a lot of speculation out there. There was also a brand new person that came forward today who apparently is Diddy's drug mule. So people are concerned now, and there's a lot of speculation that more people are going to start talking. It kind of reminds me a little bit, guys, of the R. Kelly situation and when that all went down. So I wonder if we're going to have like a docuseries about this too. But Aubrey O'Day, you might remember her from Danny D. Kane. She's also been on reality TV a bunch. She was in the group Danny D. Kane, which Diddy formed from that TV show Making the Band back, I think it wasn't the 90s, it was probably the 2000s. But she's also spoken out being like, I'm so happy this is finally coming to light. Karma's a bitch, basically. I'm paraphrasing, but basically that's the gist of it. So a lot of people seem to be coming out and talking about it. And there's also a lot of chatter out there suggesting that like Jay-Z and other people who are close to Diddy are going to be implicated, and that like all of this whole group, this whole hip-hop industries group's secrets are going to come to light, and that they're all going to be exposed. So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens and what materialized from these raids. Now, he, of course, is denying everything, right? And his attorney issued a statement saying that he's totally innocent of any wrongdoing. The exact statement reads, "Yesterday, there was a gross overuse of military-level force as search warrants were executed at Mr. Combs' residences. There is no excuse for the excessive show of force and hostility exhibited by authorities or the way his children and employees were treated. Mr. Combs was never detained, but spoke to and cooperated with authorities. Despite media speculation, neither Mr. Combs nor any of his family members have been arrested, nor has their ability to travel been restricted in any way. This unprecedented ambush, paired with an advanced coordinated media presence, leads to a premature rush of judgment of Mr. Combs, and it's nothing more than a witch hunt based on meritless accusations made in civil lawsuits. There has been no finding of criminal or civil liability with any of these allegations. Mr. Combs is innocent and will continue to fight every single day to clear his name." A really good statement, definitely, 100%, but kind of standard and kind of to be expected, in my opinion. But again, we'll see. We will see what happens. I mean, this coming off of the heels of R. Kelly, which was years ago, but like coming off of the heels of everything that's going on right now with Nickelodeon being exposed, Brian Peck, Dan Schneider, all the chatter about Amanda Bynes. I mean, it seems like, in my opinion, we're kind of ramping up. I don't want us to call it a Me Too movement, but of that ilk, it feels like we're ramping up for another one of these big waves where a lot of people are going to be called out, a lot of people are going to be held accountable, and I think there's going to be some changes, hopefully, coming in the future, at least in regards to children online, content of children, things like that. But there also have been a lot of TikToks regarding like young children that Diddy has adopted, like a little young white girl. I think she was 12 at the time. I think her name's Ava. I mean, again, a lot of this and most of it is just rumor and speculation. That's why I don't want to talk too much on it, because I'm not trying to get sued, no offense. But if you do want a deep dive, maybe I'll put a poll over on Spotify. And if you do want like a full Diddy deep dive, we can dedicate a full episode to that where I like really go through all the nitty gritty here, because it appears to date back decades. Some people even suggesting that he's responsible for the murder of Tupac because there was like a feud. But yeah, there's a lot to unpack here, because and my algorithm is just like chock full of it. Every time I scroll, it's a new video, it's a new meme, it's new something. And I'm reposting some of them on my Instagram because I can't help but chuckle at some of them. They are really, people are so creative, guys. So we don't know if he's guilty or not. Presumed innocent until proven guilty. But I'm reposting all of those over on my Instagram too, if you want to check those out, which my Instagram is @_AnnieElise. All of this stuff happening with Diddy has also now brought up Justin Bieber into the conversation and into the fold again, wondering like how he's doing, because some really interesting clips from a long time ago are now resurfacing. And just like they did with the Nickelodeon stuff, it makes you wonder, was that just super inappropriate, which isn't excusable, or
Was there something more behind all of these clips? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. So what do you guys think? So that's what we've got for today's episode. As a reminder, don't forget, sign up for that giveaway because I am giving away cash money. The winners will be announced and contacted this Friday. I will put the link to the giveaway in the show notes. All you got to do is throw your email address in there and then bam, you are entered. It is easy peasy lemon squeezy, as my four-year-old would say. But please, only one entry per person because multiple entries will disqualify you. All right, guys, that's all I've got for you in today's episode. If you have an extra 30 seconds and you are enjoying this content, please don't forget to leave a rating and review over on Apple Podcasts. And if you feel like you still need more of a true crime fix for your week, I do release bonus Friday episodes every single Friday. It's exclusive. It's ad-free. I do that through Apple Podcasts, so you can get it over there. Or you can get it through Patreon, which I also will link in the show notes below. It is patreon.com/AnnieElise. And there are also so many other benefits over there. You can get access to our private group thread, our group chat. You can get one-on-one access with me where we can do Q&As, questions, talk, merch discounts, other giveaways, more bonus content, bonus videos. I mean, all the things. All right, guys, thanks again for tuning into another episode, and I will be back on the mic with you very, very soon. But until then, be nice and don't kill people. All right, guys, thanks so much and take care. Bye.